Oh, c'est bon. C'est très bien.
Bonjour et bienvenue dans Unfinished Business, le podcast sur comment gagner sa vie sur le web. Avec moi, Andy Clark, et avec lui...
Richard, as I used to be called at school in French lessons.
Ah oui, très bien, merci. Très bien, merci. Oui, très chaud en France aujourd'hui. 33.
Wow, that's hot.
Yeah, it is hot.
That's hot.
That's about as much French as I can possibly muster. But the problem is with my French is that I speak like a dirty old man, like French accent.
Yes.
And I can't sort of get out of it. It's like when I try to speak Spanish, I just sound like Speedy Gonzalez. So to the point where I've actually created a French alter ego, whose name is Albert Galoche. Yeah, I thought that galoche was a funny word, and I thought that it meant like galoshes, you know, Wellington boots. Yeah. But apparently, no. Apparently, in French, galoche is a passionate kiss, which kind of just goes with the whole Albert Galoche. Bonjour, Madame Sixty. So that's it. Albert Galoche.
Excellent. Well, yeah.
So yes, for the listeners who are not able to see the background, I am on holiday in France, but we couldn't resist doing another episode of Unfinished Business. So yeah, I'll be here for another couple of weeks. And then we are dropping Alex in Germany. No, we're dropping Alex in Switzerland. And then we're going to have a little bit of a poodle back through Germany and Switzerland and get back home beginning of September. So just kind of, you know, just a nice long break. But, and this could be a topic for what we want to talk about today, I'm still working on stuff while I'm away. You know, I kind of like, you know, I'm sitting here looking at a laptop and I've written a bunch of articles. I've started thinking about some new videos. We're recording this. I'm responding to client emails and doing blog posts and various stuff. And I think it's because, you know, we've been coming here now for 20 plus years or so, and it always to the same place, and it kind of feels like home. So it's almost as if we don't kind of like go on holiday and do a complete switch off. It's like we just come and have a change of scene and, you know, enjoy the time hanging out together. So what do you do for holidays?
Well, for holidays, so because I've still got kids at the moment who come on holiday with us, 11 and 14, so I can't really, you know, be too distant. So I have to be present and want to be. So I am pretty clear. And actually, this is kind of a rule that we have at Clear Left anyway, is that when you're on holiday, there is zero expectation of you doing anything work-wise. In terms of getting in touch or responding to emails or anything, it's like only under like proper, genuine kind of emergency sort of thing. And that's not a bit of an urgent request from a client. That doesn't count as an emergency. It's one of the advantages, I suppose, of work for an agency that has quite a few people. And it's also to some degree what, you know, clients are paying for. They don't want everything just to shut down on their project because one person goes on holiday. So we have that as quite a strict rule. And even though I'm the MD, I stick to it as well because, well, I want to. It does often mean that you do get that hectic 1 or 2 weeks leading up to the holiday where you're desperately trying to tie up all the loose ends and do all the bits of handover for whatever you're working on, making sure that someone's lined up to do that proposal that's supposed to be in by the end of next week, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So it does make it quite stressful in the lead up to a holiday, but then at least I can be completely incommunicado almost for that week or two while I'm away.
I mean, we've been coming here, like I said, for 20 plus years or so, and it's a little rural part of southern France. And when we first started coming here, it was a complete disconnect because, you know, there was no Wi-Fi, there was no internet for miles around. We had to drive to Narbonne to a cyber cafe to frantically download emails and RSS feeds and all of that stuff, reading material. And then over the years, the internet got closer and closer. So we'd start going to the McDonald's on the outskirts of Narbonne, as they had free Wi-Fi. And then there was Wi-Fi at the Café de la Poste in the next little town, which is like a 5-minute drive away. And then finally it arrived here at Les Alibert. And then at the beginning, it was like a little dial-up thing in the main building. So you had to kind of go there. And then in recent years, they've put in a big, you know, modern fiber system. So now, you know, you can't walk around this place or you know, it's everywhere. So it kind of has changed. And sometimes we do feel a little bit nostalgic for the times when we'd go on the internet twice a week.
Yeah, well, I'm quite keen for that to sort of be the case when we're on holiday. I mean, because I've been doing web design one form or another as a full-time professional for 25 years. But before that, in the 90s, it was a hobby that I managed to turn into a job. And so there are still aspects. There's lots of stuff I still love about web design and would quite happily do in my spare time. So that kind of comes in a little bit when I'm away, but I don't take a laptop with me. So it's only stuff that I could do on my phone. So I might listen to some podcasts, for example. And then sometimes I'd be thinking more about, like, if I did spend quite a lot of one holiday before we had kids. So when Wendy was sunbathing around the pool, I was busy writing notes to make my typography book, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. I took a few books with me as references and was just putting together stuff. And that's kind of what I like nerding out to in my spare time anyway, if I'm not too exhausted from the working day and from kids. So like bits of it do creep in because it's stuff that I like to do in my spare time, but I definitely don't bring a laptop. So there's a limit to what you can do and how much work you can bring.
I wouldn't bring a client project. You know, there's a couple of little things that I might be finishing off for somebody, but, you know, I wouldn't be sitting here working, you know, 8 hours a day on a client project. But I find that being in a different environment, even stupid things like, you know, there's no PowerPoint outside where I like to sit. So, you know, I've only got as much time as the laptop lasts before I have to come back indoors again and charge it up. And there's, you know, you don't want to be doing that. But I do find that being in this sort of different environment means that I get ideas for things that probably I wouldn't get when I'm just, you know, at home. And it's that kind of time to think a little bit. So
yeah, that's definitely true. The mind wanders. I mean, it's why I quite like going to conferences. It's maybe 25% for the talks, 25% for meeting some people there. And then the other half is suddenly my mind is sparked. I'm always writing stuff down in a notepad, but it's not necessarily anything about what I'm listening to in the talk. It's just something that's triggered a thought. And as you say, it's similar to that, you know, that whole thing that everyone says about, I'll get my best ideas in the shower in the morning because it mind's been processing overnight. But if you've got a week or two away from those pressing things that you need to be thinking about and doing and deadlines and stuff, then all of that processing that might have been happening in the background starts to come forward. And so I do make sure I have a notebook with me to just capture thoughts. And they are sometimes work related or...
I mean, it's weird. We went out for dinner last night with the people that own this place. And it was a really nice evening. We get back here at about 10 o'clock or so and, you know, chill out for a bit. Alex and Sue go to bed and I sit outside because it's cold. It's cooler outside at night than it is in the house. So I'm sort of sitting outside and I get this idea for a blog post. And I think, do you know what? I'm just going to sit and write that. So, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes later, I'm still sitting there with a cup of coffee or a Coke or something. And you know, and I've written this thing and I publish it. And I've done that like four times while we've been on holiday. And that doesn't sort of feel like work. I mean, I know that you think, well, you know, yes, promoting, or it's, you know, growing your audience or extending your reach or whatever influencers say. But, you know, I had an idea and I wanted to put it out there.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I meant about so much of still doing what I started out as a hobby. There's aspects of it. And it's that includes writing blog posts. I enjoy writing, and I enjoy writing about the web. And so that always has served professional purposes to some degree, but it isn't the reason necessarily, not with most of what I write anyway. And so, yeah, I think that's...
Well,
even if you're deliberately escaping work, is that for me, if you enjoy doing it, then it doesn't matter.
Well, the other thing that I've been doing is I really, really want to get my hand back into printmaking. And I've been talking about this for a long, long, long time and never got my ass into gear. So this time I actually, you know, brought my printmaking, my carving, my lino carving tools and, you know, a bunch of lino and some designs that I'd been working on and things like that. So quite a lot of the time, you know, we'll just be sitting outside, Alex is working on something, you know, I'm sitting there carving away. And I really want to try to, you know, I'm not a sitting on a sunbed kind of person.
I've got to be doing,
my brain has to be occupied in some way or another. And doing printmaking is brilliant. So I'm probably going to end up with about half a dozen carved pieces by the time I get home. And then I'm going to get home and buy a little press.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we did a lino printing sort of afternoon for people at Clear Left as a bit of a social. And everyone loved it. Even I enjoyed it. And normally it's like, oh, that's a bit close to art. I'm really scared about art. But it was great fun. We had a really good time doing it.
Yeah, no, I've done it for donkeys. Well, I did it donkeys years ago. I haven't done it for donkeys years. But I did it donkeys years ago when I was at art school. It was my main kind of medium. And, you know, I always used to really love it. Sue used to joke about the fact that, you know, she'd be walking around the flat getting little kind of sharp shavings of lino between her toes because it was everywhere. But I've been meaning to get back into doing it. And my problem was that I always kind of felt a little bit too precious about it. I'd be thinking, you know, what are you going to make? What's the point of it? Who's going to look at it? Where are you going to put it? You know, I'd be kind of not escaping that kind of like producing a commercial piece of artwork mentality.
Right, yeah.
Then I just sort of had this realization. It's like, no, just do it for yourself. You know, if you want to make a picture of, I'm looking here at one that I've done of Mainz Cathedral. It's like, you know, I want it. I took a photo. I like the photo. I'm going to make it into a print. If nobody sees it, if it doesn't go up on the wall, fine. But I will have enjoyed doing it, and I'll kind of get better and better as I, you know, do more and more of them.
My level of ambition was much, much lower. It was simply, I don't want to do something which is just embarrassingly bad. Like, by bad, I mean, like, could have been bettered by a three-year-old bad. That's the way where I pitch myself in terms of ability to do anything kind of artistic with my hands that doesn't involve a keyboard and a mouse.
It's an interesting one because it is about, you know, the picture. But so much of this is where I think I enjoy it. So much of it is about the process and, you know, the tools that you use and the marks that you make and all that kind of thing. And I think that's why I enjoy it, you know, as much as making a picture. It's, you know, being kind of absorbed by a process.
Yeah, and it is a lovely process doing those when you're scraping away kind of the background and so on to form that picture. And there's an amount of patience that needs to happen there, and you can see feel the kind of the picture that you've crafted evolving.
We went to there was an exhibition, a surrealist art exhibition in Narbonne in the cathedral, And we went a week or so ago, and there's actually some Picasso lino cuts in this exhibition, which I've never seen in the flesh before. And there was something really beautifully kind of like free and flowing about them, which is the complete opposite of the sort of stuff that I've been doing, which is, you know, precise kind of architecture stuff. And I've got this process where you print out the artwork on a piece of paper on a laser printer, and then you literally glue it face down to the piece of lino and wait a day, and then you wipe the back of the paper off and you're left with almost like a stencil of the artwork on the lino that you can use as a guide for for carving, which is really useful. But even in the few that I've been working on so far, I'm now thinking, do you know what? I want something which is a little less kind of, you know, restrictive. I want something where I can, you know, kind of do things in a bit more of an expressive way. But I suppose it's all a process, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about holidays. Are you going away at all this year?
We went to Dorset for a short week before last, which is really nice. Yeah, it's lovely there. Hadn't really holidayed in Dorset before. We were near Swanage, Port Castle, around there. So I promised the kids sandy beaches as opposed to Brighton's famous pebbly beaches. So that's why Dorset was the destination, and it's not too far away from us. So it was good. A little getaway. Nice. So I was reading a blog post that you just posted recently, Andy, which intrigued me, where you'd created a fake agency by way of some business research, essentially. So tell me what led you to do that.
Well, do you know, we all know, I think, that it's been, I think you used the word brutal from a business point of view, or somebody that you met said the business had been brutal. And, you know, we used to get a mix of things. You know, I used to get people that I knew or knew of me as Andy, the web designer, that would kind of get in touch and say, hey, you know, we'd like you to design a busking festival in Switzerland, or, you know, work on a cybersecurity product or whatever it might be. But also along the way, there would be little bread and butter clients. You know, the company that makes flanges in Denby, or, you know, some other sort of smaller business, locally usually. And yeah, there'd always be a little bit of a kind of a mix of that. And I noticed that we don't get any of that. And maybe for the last 2 years or more, we don't get any of that kind of business coming through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if it was, well, it could have been a number of factors. It could have been the fact that if you are, you know, Flange and Sons, you might look at my portfolio and go, oh man, this guy only does, he only does big clients. You know, he's not going to want to work with me. Or they might think, oh man, this guy just does, you know, musician websites or animated orangutans, you know, and I make flanges. So, you know, he's not for me. And then there's the whole kind of, you know, design of the site, which is very different from, you know, if you Google, as I did, you know, local businesses, local web designers, it's a very different kind of proposition. So I thought, I wonder whether the website is too out there for Flange and Sons.
Mm.
And I wondered if having a much more normal, in inverted commas, web designer website would actually generate traffic. So I set one up in an evening, and I set up a fake company. And I just called it NWWD, you know, North Wales Web Design. And I registered North Wales Web Design .agency. And I set it up on Netlify. And then I thought, right, I need content for this website and I need a design. So I scraped the top 10 Google results for North Wales Web Design and fed that content into ChatGPT. and said, I'm creating a new website company. Here's a bunch of, you know, reference material. These are the six things that I want to focus on. Write me the copy. And it did. And I pretty much used it word for word. And then I thought, I know, I need a design. So I set it up in exactly the way in which I complain that people design websites, generally. It's got the big full-width Jumbotron banner. It's got four columns in a grid with icons. It's got a pricing table. It's got, you know, all of the usual kind of design tropes that come straight out of Bootstrap or Material or whatever the framework is. And then I thought, right, I need some clients. So I make some fake client projects. And I design them to look like everybody else's web clients, you know, with full width banners and 2-3 column layouts and things like that. And I put it out there and I submitted it to Google. And then about a week later, it hit Google. And I think it was like second page or something. So I added a fake blog and I asked ChatGPT to write me an article about the importance of websites for small businesses. And I used it without editing, straight out the box. And then I got it to about position 4 on the first page of Google for North Wales web design within a couple of weeks. And so I thought, right, job done. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to wait for the phone to ring. And it didn't. I'm still waiting.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I've had, you know, other clients that I've been working with, and I've said to them, how did you hear about me? And they say, yeah, we Googled creative web designers and, you know, your name came up. And they weren't put off by the animated orangutans or, you know, Andy dressed as Elvis. So I made me sort of realize, I think, that the problem was not necessarily in people being off put by my side, because if they were the right people, they wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But also that maybe either that level of business, that level of client, Mr. Flange and Sons, is either not searching Google for North Wales web design anymore, or they're not getting websites. You know, maybe they're doing things themselves on DIY. You know, maybe they're doing a Squarespace or a Wix site. Maybe they're just doing everything on Facebook or on social media. So it was an experiment. And, you know, it's an experiment that's not worth me renewing the domain name, you know, for another year. But it was an interesting thing to do. And I wonder what my local kind of web community, web industry people would think about it. Because I was a little worried that I might be, you know, sounding a bit kind of condescending or, you know, cynical or whatever about their work and their content. But it was an interesting exercise.
Yeah, interesting indeed. I mean, it got me thinking about where we get our inquiries from, and we certainly do get some through Google, but we did get one recently where they'd done something like type in UK web design agencies in ChatGPT, and ours clear left came up in the list of 10 that got sent back, which was fortunate. And it was on purely on that basis that they got in touch, because like ChatGPT responded with us in its text, so they didn't hallucinate us in that instance. But so that was kind of interesting, and then you immediately think, well, how do we get into ChatGPT? And I think, thinking back to that North Wales web design website that you just set up, or and company, if you like, one assumes that it would then take, you'd have to be mentioned elsewhere. So I guess it's sort of to be a likely response to that sort of prompt. I guess it must clear left in that case must have come up in similar lists, or maybe not lists, maybe that's a bit too direct. But in that sort of conversation, if you like. So in some ways, it sort of harps back to Google's early days of where of PageRank, where pretty much the only way that you ranked was based on who linked to you and the quality of those sites, and that gave you your ranking. So quality aside, it's probably much more down to volume, isn't it, really, with GPT. But I guess you've got to come up in other people's pages one way or another. But it's just going to be volume, pure volume, nothing to do with quality. Because the volume would make you more statistically likely to come up in that text, because that's all those things are. They're just massive statistical models at the end of the day.
Well, I've just done a ChatGPT search asking it for the top 10 web designers in the UK. And it's focused entirely on agencies, and ClearLeft isn't in that list.
Boom.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was in someone's list. Yeah.
But it did say at the beginning, looks like there's a temporary issue with my browsing tool, so I can't fetch real-time rankings at the moment. But I can still give you a solid list of some of the most respected and consistently top-rated website designers and agencies in the UK. Made by many, Superb, Studio Output, UXB in London, Pixel Fridge, Red Web in Bournemouth, never heard of any of these people, Brave New World, HOTA, Bureau for Visual Affairs, again in London, and Green Chameleon in Bristol, who's got clients like Adobe and Google. But no, never heard of those people.
Have you checked that they all actually are real? Because I've asked for things like, give me a list of design magazines that I've had contact with for press releases, and some were literally, they were hallucinations. They were made up. They sounded plausible with a URL, and but they just completely made up.
No, I haven't checked it because I've literally just done that search.
Yeah. But anyway, that was what they said. So the ClearLeft came up in response to whatever prompt they did. And they were a proper serious client with some, you know, proper budget and stuff. So, yeah, interesting.
Where do you get most of the work from? Is it still all reputation and referrals?
Yeah, the vast majority is. Someone contacted us recently, and I couldn't quite work out exactly how, but we'd done some work with, they'd seen somewhere or heard somewhere that we'd done work with the Natural History Museum, and that was what triggered them to contact us. But I'm not quite sure what the context was, whether that was just Googling something like museum website design agency or something like that, but because we could feasibly come up in that. But so that wasn't a direct reputation, but it does mean you've got to keep putting your name out. And we have had, so there's an interesting client we've won at the moment, we're just about to start working with. We haven't had, I can't say who it is yet because they haven't said yes that we can do as yet, but it's a university client. And actually, we lost a pitch to redesign their website in 2019. And the website, which they have now, was the one that was created in 2019, 2020, and is now time to redesign it. And we have, this time, won the pitch, actually, almost uncontested to redesign it this time around.
Okay.
Basically, the only reason we were a bit pricey for them last time, but now they have the budget, in other words, the budget to do it properly. And so we won it. But one of the things that convinced them to come back to us was us putting our case studies out of other universities that we're doing and actually putting some of those onto LinkedIn and things like that. And it was sort of a case of them, oh, ClearLeft were really good. We wanted to work with them, but we couldn't afford them last time. Oh, I see they're still doing university stuff. That's good. We'll get back in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a kind of a combination of fairly standard marketing, plus also having made a great impression before, even though they weren't a client. But it was a useful reminder that even pictures that you've lost, you may have made a good impression. And so
you can
go back to those people and see, especially if you see that if someone's done a ropey job on the website, then it's definitely time to go back and say that. Not that this particular client, that if they heard this podcast, they know who we were talking about. Their site is not ropey, but it's not serving their purposes now. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, no, or never burn your bridges with work that you lose, because at some point, you know, you may cross paths with those people again.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, so it was an interesting experiment. Now, I've got to say that, you know, I would happily work for Flange and Sons. I actually do quite like sometimes working with smaller businesses. I like working with people that are really seriously invested in what they do. It really matters to them, rather than, you know, in the past I've done plenty of work for, you know, local councils or, you know, things like that. And you just know that the people aren't going to be in that job in 2 years. And actually they've just been given the website project as a tick box to, you know, to achieve it. And those kind of things aren't satisfying at all. But sometimes, you know, and I look at, you know, Mr. Flange and think, you know, what stories can we tell about that business? You know, and it's not often just about the, you know, the flanges. If I knew what a flange was, I keep using it as an example. I've got no flipping clue what a flange is.
At least you're not talking about aluminium flanges now, because they really wouldn't work properly.
Oh, okay. So I have mentioned flanges before. I know it's an old person's thing. But you know, but then there are always stories to tell, and I think that sometimes those are just as interesting as, you know, like a big business.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we work with clients of lots of different sizes. We tend to work with pretty big organizations, but we do work with some much smaller ones sometimes. And that's where it changes the pace of things. It changes those relationships, particularly if you're working directly with the business owners. That can be quite stressful, because you know that they're probably stretching their investment as far as they can go, and you're looking at thinking, there's not loads of you know, time and money to work with here, but we really like you and we like you what you're trying to do with it, so we've got to try and really give you the best job that we possibly can for your money and make sure that investment actually pans out. And so you have that extra bit of motivation. With the bigger clients, you still form those personal relationships, but they're different, and the problems are that you're trying to uncover and sort out at a different sort of scale, and they're different kinds of problems. So I think it's just that change of pace works nicely for us.
Have you ever had it where you've been working with somebody at one company or one organization, and then all of a sudden they leave, you know, they're either let go or, you know, they move jobs, and then, you know, they'll go to somewhere new and they'll get back in touch with you?
Yes. Yeah, more than once, actually. In fact, two of our current clients fit that exact description. So someone we were working with at Natural History Museum is now working for UAL, University of Arts London, and we are now working for her at University of Arts London. And similarly with UCL, they worked at one of the London councils. Actually, two jobs previous to that. The intermediary job, we tried to work with them, but it just didn't work out. But then we ended up working with them subsequently. So yeah, that does happen a lot. I mean, that's the nice thing in some ways about being around as a company for 20 years. There's enough time for that to happen, for people to move on and then to realize that they're sort of taking you with them, or at least opening up that opportunity. And it becomes quite rewarding when you realize they've probably got promoted into a more senior role, and they still want you to come and be a, you know, help them in their job effectively.
Mm. No, it was a weird definitely. One. I mean, that's how I started working with Nozomi Networks in Switzerland for 5 years. Was, you know, I worked on a job with a developer who, you know, once that job had been finished and I didn't work with that company again, didn't need to. And then, you know, a bunch of years later, I get an email out of the blue from this one guy to say, hey, I'm working on this cybersecurity product. You know, do you want to come and do some design stuff? So I say you can never burn your bridges, but, you know, sometimes there are people that just, oh, it doesn't matter what you pay me, I'm not going to work with you again. But those people are few and far between.
Well, they really are. And But they do exist, and sometimes that's a person, and sometimes that's actually the organizational structure they found themselves in. But the one of the tricky things that can happen, I think this might have happened to you at some point, is often when you have a client, particularly in a bigger company, there's someone there who they might be the project sponsor, or there's someone there who is your who got you in the first place, either shortlisted or something like that. They're the ones who brought you in as a recommendation. And if they leave, particularly, it's tricky if they leave during a project in particular, because then the dynamics will change naturally within the client's project team anyway. And maybe suddenly you're not quite as favorable for some reason. But also if they leave after you finish the project, and then they're gone from that company, it's harder to perhaps sometimes to stay with that client. Yes, the person who left, they might join another company and you end up getting some work there. But there is always this well, very often the champion there in the client who's a champion for you. And if they go, that can cause some trickiness. You have to work quite hard to make sure that doesn't cause a vacuum.
Well, it's interesting. One of my publishers for articles, the guy that I've been working with a lot over the last sort of 6 to 7 months, he's gone. And he was my relationship with that particular organization. He was my champion. He was the guy that came to me and said, hey, do you want to, actually, I've seen your YouTube videos. Do you want to do some stuff for us? And, I will have to work quite hard, I think. Because quite often, sometimes, you are Brian's guy and somebody new comes in and they're not going to want to use Brian's guy. They're going to want to use their own guy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that can be the difficulty. So as long as you're still Brian's guy when at the company that Brian moves to, then you are okay. But it makes that initial, it can introduce problems and difficulty. Extending any contracts and stuff like that because, someone wants to bring their own people in.
But I'm actually, he's not called Brian. But I don't know whether his news is out there yet, so I shall refer to him as Brian. But I'm actually thinking, hey, maybe there's an opportunity. Maybe there's something that, Brian and I can do independently, with my knowledge of what I do and his knowledge of publishing and other things. Maybe we can work something out. So there will be conversations with Brian, I think, over the next month or two.
That's good news.
If you're listening, Brian, you know who I'm talking about. So what else has been happening? I mean, we've obviously done a couple of interviews so far. We've got a new interview coming up, I think, next week.
We do, accessibility-related one, which I'm very excited about.
And there's a bunch of other people that I think we're going to really enjoy talking to over the next few weeks or so. But first, I've got to have my holiday.
Yes. Yep. Your family will be wondering where you are.
Well, they know exactly where I am. In fact, they can probably
hear me. Because they can see you through a window.
They can probably hear me through this wall.
Yeah.
So, should we wrap it up?
Let's do that, yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time to listen to us today. And I will go off and enjoy my sunny holiday in France. And, Rich, you can enjoy your what looks like a sunny day in Brighton.
It's bright. It's not particularly sunny, but it's bright. And I'm looking forward to the weekend. So, yeah, we'll catch up soon.
All right, see you next time.
See you.